Hello and welcome to Biblical Breadcrumbs, where we are weighing the evidence for Jesus and who Jesus is, what he claims, what he does, what he says, all those things. And we're asking this question, who is Jesus? And as we continue doing that, a realization you have to get to is there's a point at which you have to make a decision for yourself, right? I'm making a decision for myself. I know what I believe, but there's a point at which that I start stepping back because it's your job to make your own decision. I'm not concerned, particularly, if I can't change your mind, right? That's on you. That's not on me. And so I'm going to do my best to display the message that's here and the evidence that we have, and you get to take a look and decide for yourself. Because the fact is, God has given a lot of evidence. And the fact is, there is a lot of evidence from a historical perspective or from a theological perspective. If you believe that God exists, you can believe that God gave evidence. If you don't believe that God exists, firstly, there's plenty of reason to believe that God exists, but secondly, then there's plenty of historical backing to think that the Bible is legitimate. And so from either perspective, God has given a lot of evidence, including what he did last time. Last time we considered it in Luke chapter 9, when Jesus walks up on a mountain, right, and God transfigures his face, he transfigures his clothing, he puts him with Moses and Elijah, and eventually dismisses Moses and Elijah, calls down from heaven, claims Jesus is his son, puts all the emphasis on him as the chosen one, and shows him for who he truly is. He reveals a little bit of his glory in the person of Jesus. He reveals his authority in the person of Jesus, and he leaves it up to us. What are we going to do with that? There comes a point at which you have to make a decision. And when you get to Luke chapter 10, there are a couple of places here that I want to highlight. I know that last time, and by last time I mean like 5 minutes ago, right? I'm recording this right after I recorded the last one. I'll probably just release them at pretty much the same time. Just a few minutes ago, what I was talking about is this idea that I'm going to skim through the rest of the chapters of Luke, probably just one paragraph per chapter. I'm already breaking that rule, so it's a good thing I said I didn't say I would promise it, because there are a couple of places I want to highlight in chapter 10. In chapter 10, Jesus is sending out some of his disciples. He's sending them out to preach, right? And so he's taking these he's taking these 12, but not just his 12 closest guys. He's also got a bunch of others. It's about 70 or 72, depending on the manuscript that you have. But he's sending out these 70 guys, 35 pairs, or 36 if there are 72 guys, to go and preach the word of the kingdom. And as such, as he's sending them out, they're coming back with success stories sometimes. They're going to come back with some non-success stories. But what Jesus says, when he's dealing with them, we find it in verse 13 to 15. What Jesus says as he's sending them out is he pronounces some woes or some judgments on some Jewish cities. So read Jesus' words in verses 13, 14, and 15. Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 13. Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the miracles that had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, which occurred in you, they would have repented long ago, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. But it will be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will not be exalted to heaven, will you? You'll be brought down to Hades. And Jesus continues there, right? This is breaking into part of his commands to them. He's talking about conviction of cities, and he's talking about condemnation of cities. His disciples are going to preach in many different places, and many different places are going to have many different responses. Some people are going to listen, and some people aren't, but there's a judgment on those who don't. Because what Jesus has done, he's brought in this amazing teaching, and he's brought in these miracles that prove that he's more than just a man. He is more than just a man. He is God as well, and he's given you miracle after miracle to prove who he is. And so you have these pictures of who Jesus is. You have these impressions of who Jesus is. But more than that, he's now given this charge to the apostles and to other disciples of his, these 70 or 72 guys in all, that he's sending out. And he's sending them out with the message. And he's sending them out with some miraculous powers to heal the sick and to cast out demons. And he's sending them out with the same goal. So now they've got this divine backing too. And what Jesus says is there are going to be people who listen to that. Because even though you're bringing a very new and radical message, even though you're bringing a message that has not been verified by any other source, you're also bringing that stamp of verification. You're also bringing that seal of authenticity. When you bring in the miracles, when you perform miraculous powers, humans can't do that, but God can. That's your seal of authenticity. But there will be some who don't believe. And so woe to you, Chorazin and Bethsaida and Capernaum, three Jewish cities that Jesus really focused a lot of his teaching in. Capernaum was even like his hometown. That's why it's called out specifically by itself. It's not the town he was born in, but it does seem to be the town that he moved to. And then he spent a lot of time there as part of his ministry. He's talking about Capernaum, right? He's talking about places that he spent a lot of time in. And yet, even though he's spending all this time there, even though he's doing all this great teaching there, even though he's performing all these miracles there, the people there don't listen. Woe to you, right? You've been given such great opportunity, and yet you're not using it. You know, if we'd walked into the foreign cities of Tyre and Sidon, if we'd walked into the foreign city of, well, that's not here, actually. In Matthew's account, he compares it to Sodom, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. These terrible cities, right? Tyre and Sidon here, terrible cities that misused their power and abused the poor who couldn't take care of themselves. These places, if I'd done miracles there, they would have listened. They are bad people, fundamentally bad people, and yet they would have listened to me. And then I come to you guys. Right? You're supposed to be religious. You're supposed to follow God. You're supposed to make sacrifices in the temple. You're supposed to be the faithful ones. I come to you all, and what? And you're not doing anything. Now, what in the world is that about? Precisely. Pray tell, right? What's going on in your heads that none of this is communicating itself? I've given you so much evidence. What are you doing with it? Nothing. You're taking the miracles. You're getting the healing, and then you're not coming to faith. There's a point at which judgment is going to happen. Unfortunately, there's a cutoff point. And Jesus is giving proof after proof and miracle after miracle, and so much evidence is on his side, but there's a point at which you have to decide to actually do something with it. But many people don't. And many people aren't going to. Many people don't want to wrestle with this idea and recognize who Jesus is, and many people just want to sidestep and look the other way and go a different direction. Sometimes it is purposeful, ignoring the things that Jesus has done. Sometimes it's just oversight and they just kind of pass on it. Sometimes maybe you just don't have opportunity to hear the message. But many people don't investigate. Many people laugh off Jesus, even though he's doing miracles for these people right in front of them, and they still go their own way and walk their own direction. Many people nowadays give the excuse, well, if God is real, why doesn't he come down and prove it? Why doesn't he show me a miracle, right? You know what? He did come down and prove it. That's what the Bible is records of him coming down and proving it. Records of him coming down and performing miracles. And you know what? Humans are going to do what humans are going to do. And it doesn't matter what God does, because ultimately, we get free will and we get to make our own choices. So woe to you, Chorazin and Bethsaida. Woe to you, Capernaum. You had your opportunities. You had so many opportunities, but you wasted them. If I had gone to the Gentile cities, they would have listened. But I came to you guys, the faithful ones. You were supposed to be godly, and you've wasted your opportunity. And Jesus is begging all of us to not be like them. Unfortunately, this is not just something that exists in Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum. Those are a little while removed from Jerusalem. They're up towards Galilee, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. They're up in the kind of less godly, less religious area of Judea. Everywhere was religious, but these are more removed from their center of worship. And so, you know, these guys are less godly, you would think. Until you realize that, no, even the religious leaders that they have are not very godly. And even the ones who are in charge of teaching and preaching the religion, even those who are in charge of teaching Judaism to people, are not, in fact, very godly. And that's where we run into this last story that I want to look at. A really, really important story. starting in verse 25 of chapter 10, going down through verse 37, you have an encounter here. This is called the story of the Good Samaritan. It's a parable, like we looked at earlier, where Jesus tells one thing, one human story that they would have an experience with and they would be able to understand on a human level that has a deeper spiritual meaning behind it. But he's telling this story. Why? He's telling the story because one of the religious elite stands up and challenges Jesus, right? Jesus is the Son of God. He challenges that. He challenges Jesus as a teacher. He challenges Jesus as a moral guide. He challenges Jesus as a religious leader. He challenges Jesus. Why? He's heard the man speak, evidently. He's probably seen some miracles or at least heard of them. And so what does he do in response? He raises a challenge because he doesn't want to listen to what Jesus has to say. It's a shame. It's a terrible shame. And yet we're all called individually to evaluate who Jesus is. He has evaluated and decided Jesus is not God. He has looked all the miracles in the face and said, you know, I just don't believe in them. And there's only so much Jesus can do to help these people who look at evidence and ignore it. And so the lawyer stands up, and wishing to question, to test Jesus, he starts talking. Luke chapter 10, let's start reading in verse 25. We'll cover this last story pretty quickly. And a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "What is written in the law? How does it read to you?" And the lawyer answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You've answered correctly. Do this and you will live." But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" And Jesus replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and they beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and he saw the man, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, who was on a journey, came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion, and came to him, and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them, and he put him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii, and gave them to the innkeeper, and said, 'Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, I will, when I return, I will repay you.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy toward him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do the same." What do you have here? You have a picture in which one of the religious teachers, right? What is he called? He's called he's a lawyer. Sorry, the text is really small and it's pretty dark in this room. He is a lawyer. That is not a prosecutor. That is someone who is an expert in the Jewish law, right? He is a religious person who has been trained to understand the scriptures, and he gets up. And instead of looking at Jesus' miracles, instead of looking at Old Testament prophecies, which you'd be familiar with, instead of looking towards what Jesus is saying and what he's doing and how he's acting and what he's claiming and evaluating this evidence, he dismisses it. He ignores it because the religious leaders at this time ignored all the evidence as to who Jesus is. They looked at the evidence and discounted it. They didn't want to believe it. And instead of looking at all the miracles he's doing, they said, "All right, how do we get rid of the evidence for those miracles?" There's a story in which Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, one of his friends, in John chapter 11, and I think it's John chapter 12, the next chapter, when the Pharisees admit that he raised Lazarus from the dead, and everybody knows about it. And so the solution, what's the solution to that? It's not to admit that Jesus raised someone from the dead. It's to kill that guy again so that nobody can say he's still alive. They look at the evidence and they ignore it. And so this teacher, this lawyer, stands up and he wants to test Jesus. And so he asks him, "All right, Jesus, what do I do to inherit eternal life?" You know, nothing wrong with that question. Good question. What do I do to inherit eternal life? That's probably pretty good to ask and answer because, you know, I'd like eternal life. All right, Jesus, what do I do? And what Jesus says is, aren't you a teacher of the law? Right? Haven't you read the law? Well, what does the law read like to you? When you look at the law of Moses, when you look at the Old Testament, what do you think it says? Right? You're supposed to be the teacher here. You tell me. And the guy says, well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, those are pretty important. And Jesus says, yeah. Yeah, they are. Congratulations, right? You figured it out. You cracked the code. You found the two most important commands. Number one, have a good relationship with God. Number two, have a good relationship with people. And you know what? That's all there is to it. Because if you have a good relationship with God, you're not going to lie or murder or steal or commit adultery. If you have a good relationship with people, you're not going to lie to them, steal from them, murder them, or commit adultery with their spouses, right? That's not how that works. If you love God and you love your neighbor, you avoid all the bad stuff, okay? You nailed it. That's the answer. You already knew it the whole time. You don't need to ask Jesus. You read the Bible. He's just going to recite what the Old Testament said anyway, because the Old Testament was right all along. What does the law say? I don't know. What does the law say? Aren't you a lawyer? And so the lawyer kind of answers his own question. And Jesus is like, yeah, okay. And the lawyer just kind of sputters for a second because, you know, what I say to this? And then he comes up with this brilliant one in verse 29, wishing to justify himself. Here's his motivation. Not to have a good conversation, not to seek further understanding, not to ask clarifying questions, wishing to justify himself, to prove himself right. He goes to Jesus again and he says, all right, fine, define neighbor for me, right? Let's have a debate about what a neighbor is and what it means and how it works. Let's go ahead. Let's hash this out a little bit, Jesus, because your answer was a non-answer, right? I answered myself. Okay, you need to answer this question. Who is my neighbor? And Jesus says, you know who your neighbor is already. All right, fine, I'll tell you a story, all right? Here's a great story. Man is walking down a road and he gets robbed, okay? That's terrible, right? He's beaten, he's left for dead, he's on the side of the road, and a priest comes by, a religious guy. What does the priest do? Does he help out this injured man? No. If you were a priest in those days and you're caught, you know, helping a guy who's half dead and naked and bleeding by the side of the road, you're probably unclean, unfit to serve in the temple. You'd have to, you know, take like a week absence from that. And having that religious job is really, really important. It is generally important. It is truly important, but that's not all there is to life. You know, sometimes you need to help out somebody instead of sticking to the strict rigors of your work schedule. And so there would be enough priests to fill in a slot that you left open. You should stop and help somebody. God would want you to stop and help somebody, but the priest wouldn't. It's pretty typical of this time. They would instead want to keep themselves pure and somebody else can come along and help. And so that duty falls to the Levite who's passing on the side of the road. But the Levite is also involved with temple stuff. He's not a priest. He doesn't offer the sacrifices, but he is still involved in helping around the temple. He's a sanctified person. He can't dirty himself by like getting down and like actually helping another person. No, it's his job to read the law. It's his job to teach the law. He can't do that if he's unclean, if he's busy like helping other people. That would be terrible. And so he doesn't. And he walks by on the side of the road. And guess what? The job is left to somebody else. You religious people, you're seeing so much, right? You're seeing so much work that needs doing, and you're walking by all of it, and you're leaving all of it behind. And instead of being faithful towards God and doing the things he would want you to do, you're instead following your perceived patterns of faith, which ignore God's established patterns of faith. God established the old law pointing towards Jesus. And the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the scribes and the lawyers and all these religious leaders, they took the old law, and then when Jesus came, they ignored Jesus. The old law was pointing towards Jesus. All these prophecies are about Jesus. Moses said, as part of the old law, one day there's going to be a great prophet who comes and replaces this law with another one. That was Jesus, and they missed it, right? God promises from the very beginning, you know, Satan is gonna attack the son of woman, and yet that son is going to crush Satan's head. That's Jesus from the very beginning, and yet these people ignore it. Isaiah 53 is Jesus through and through, and yet these people ignore it. They ignore what the old law was for. They ignore the purpose of the old law. They ignore who Jesus is. They ignore all the evidence, and instead, they seek to justify themselves. Instead, they seek to work for themselves. Instead, they seek to put him to the test and test him and push him down after out of his power position. He's too smart. He's too good. He's too right in what he's teaching. We got to take him down a peg or two. And so they do, and that's what they try and go for. The lawyer tries to justify himself. The lawyer tries to put himself back on top. I'm a religious elite. I can't be taken down a bit. And Jesus says, oh, bet. Oh, yes, you can. And so a Samaritan turns up. An unclean Samaritan. But guess what? He loved his neighbor. He cared about someone else who was made in the image of God, even when the priest and the Levite wouldn't. He was willing to make himself unclean to help someone else, even when you wouldn't. He was willing to sacrifice his own personal comfort to help other people, even when you wouldn't. He was on a job, right? A priest was going down and he passed by. A Levite was going by the place and he passed by. The Samaritan was on a journey. He was going somewhere, but he reroutes. And he takes this guy to an inn and he takes care of him so much better than you would. And he provides for his needs, even though, like, what right did he have to do it? He was an unclean, evil Samaritan. But he was loving people more than you. He was facing God's truth. He was listening to God's word more than you people are. You claim to be teachers, and yet you don't even understand the basic fundamental concepts of the law. You claim to be ones who understand the entire Old Testament, and yet you've missed the point. Because you're not listening to God's Messiah who he sent. You're not listening to the fulfillment of the Old Testament. You have missed the point. And what do you think you're even doing trying to judge other people? So who is his neighbor? Go ahead, riddle me this, right? Who is this guy's neighbor? And the lawyer says, I guess the one who helped. Doesn't even say the Samaritan, not willing to face it. Right, not willing to face the fact that the Samaritan was good and these Jewish people wouldn't be. He says, I guess it was the Samaritan who helped him. And Jesus says, yes. Now why don't you go and help people? Firstly, absolutely genius what Jesus does and how he reverses it on this guy. But secondly, what you're dealing with here is somebody who's questioning who Jesus is. Just like Jesus warned about, right? Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum, Israelite villages. I almost said Italian villages. It's not Italian, it's Israel. Israelite villages, well exposed to Jesus' teaching, well exposed to Jesus' miracles, and yet even in spite of that, they question and they waver and they walk away. And all of this evidence that God is providing them, even though it's solid evidence that proves who Jesus is, they ignore it because they don't care. And they go and they do other things instead. They benefit from it. They're blessed by it. They're healed by it. And yet they walk away from him. The lawyer benefits from Jesus' teaching. He understands the law better now. He benefits from Jesus' questions and his own thinking and is able to quantify these great concepts of the law, and yet he wants to justify himself. He wants to test Jesus. He doesn't want to listen and learn. He doesn't want to admit who Jesus is. Instead, he's looking at the evidence and he's walking the other way. And so he tests and he questions and he pokes and he prods and he just tries to do whatever he can to get around the truth. There's going to be a decision point that all of us have to reach. There's going to be a decision point that all of us have to get to. At some point, you know, at some point God's going to cut this world off, right? At some point, you're going to die, or the world's going to end, or some terrible like nuclear events is going to happen, and then we're all going to die. You know, that's how this world is going to go. I don't know the official end times things. I'm not sure what all will happen when, but I do know that we're all going to die at some point. And when we do, we're not able to learn anymore. We're not able to think anymore. We're not able to change things anymore. We're going to be dead, right? Regardless of whether you believe in God or not, you know you're going to die at some point. And that means you only have a short while in this life to evaluate what is true and what actually matters. Jesus has given evidence after evidence. Jesus has given many miracles. He will continue to do so, giving this great teaching and then backing it up with miraculous accounts of stuff that he's doing. Plenty of eyewitness testimony, plenty of people who are verifying this firsthand, plenty of people who have experienced this, who have lived this, who were healed by Jesus and turned into followers of him because of that. Many, many people living this way, saying these things, experiencing these things. Many people are living like this. So what do we do with that, right? That's the evidence that we have. That's the evidence that we've been given. What do we do with that evidence? Are you going to listen? Or are you going to ignore it? At the end of the day, the evidence says that Jesus existed. Jesus taught great things. Jesus did incredible, impossible things. Jesus died. And then he rose again. And you're going to have to answer that question one day. You need to start answering it now. Start thinking about it. Who is Jesus? Well, if the evidence is true, which it's evidence, it is. If the evidence is true, it points to the Bible being accurate in its characterization of him as the Christ, the Son of God. If he is the Christ, the Son of God, he has the authority and the right to command all of these things of you. And if he has the right to do that, what do you think is expected of you? You can look at the evidence, you can ignore it if you want to. But the fact is, there will come a day when we're held account to what we know and what we listen to. And the evidence that we've seen, the evidence that we've been exposed to, that's all going to be brought up before us, and we're going to have to answer for how we dealt with it. So, you have to deal with it. And I'll leave it there. I won't push further than that. Just to say, you need to do some serious thinking about who this Jesus really is. We'll continue looking at him in chapter 11 and on. We'll continue looking at these stories about who Jesus is, how he communicates himself. There are more miracles. There's more teaching. There's more of everything to come. The biggest part hasn't even happened yet. That won't happen until the end of the book. There's so much more. But we're left with this question, even only partway through. Who is he? Is he God? And if he is, how do I need to be listening and thinking about him? Well, I know this has gone a little bit long. It's about as long as one of my older episodes. Trying to keep these short and concise, but this one spilled over a little bit. Oh well, I'll do that every once in a while. Hopefully won't get judged too badly on that one. Thank you for listening. Sincerely, thank you for listening. I hope you, firstly, got some level of enjoyment out of it, but secondly, I really hope you benefited. There's a lot here, and I'm not sure how best to communicate it, but I really hope that something that was said has sparked your interest and made you think a little bit more. Whether you're a believing Christian or whether you're, you know, an atheist who's just looking into this for the first time, I really think there's a lot here. I really do sincerely believe the evidence. Hopefully you can tell that. And I would love to make the case to you. Hopefully what I'm doing is helpful in helping you to think and evaluate on who this is, because it's a pretty important question, I do believe. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and I hope you benefited. God bless, and I'll see you next time.